You know, there's certain, everybody has certain favorites. It's not right. We're supposed to love all the tzaddikim equally. And Hashem loves all the tzaddikim, and we're supposed to be like Hashem. But it happens that each one of us has a certain, besides the Bedichu, who everybody loves, everybody has a certain inclination towards a certain tzaddik, that when you learn the Torah of that tzaddik, you feel that he's speaking mamish directly to you. He didn't just write a sefer, but he wrote a sefer 150-200 years ago, but it was really meant for you. For some strange reason, Hashem put him in the world early and you're in the world late. But the sefer was really written for you. In my life, sometimes I've had over the years different periods where I felt particularly connected to a different tzaddik, the teachings of that tzaddik. But throughout all the years, there's a tzaddik who I've felt very, very drawn to. And you'll see in Mitzvah Shem, when we begin to learn, when we talk of his fascinating life, and we begin to learn some of his teachings, I think that you'll feel some of that as well. We're going to talk about, over the next probably 2 months, the great tzaddik, the Rebbe Reb Leib Eger. Reb Leib Eger, Rebbe Yehuda Leib Eger. In the past, the way that we've done it is that we've spoken about the life for a few weeks, and some stories, and then we'll spend some time studying his Svarim, Torah, Amos, and Imre Amos. The family of Eger, the name of that family, Eger, really anybody that's ever learned in yeshiva or that studied Jewish history knows that when you speak about the name of that, when you speak about that Mishpacha Eger, you think of right away of his grandfather, the great Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger was the light of the exile, was one of the greatest of all the achronim that we've ever had. Rabbi Akiva Eger, who was the Rav of Pozna, and then the son of Rabbi Akiva Eger, also an extremely famous and accomplished Goyan genius in his own right, Rabbi Shlomo Eger. And if we were to talk about Rabbi Akiva Eger and Rabbi Shlomo Eger at length, certainly about Rabbi Akiva Eger, that would be a whole year, and it wouldn't fit into the category of Chassidus, since Rabbi Akiva Eger was not one of the followers of the Talmud Baal Shem Tov. And Rabbi Shlomo Eger, the author of Gilyan Ma'asher. Also, we'll talk a little bit about Rabbi Shlomo Eger just to get an introduction. You also probably know that the Eger family married then with the Chassam Sofer's Mishpacha. Chassam Sofer, in the second marriage, was the son-in-law of Rabbi Akiva Eger, though they weren't so far apart in age. But that's a separate sugya. The sugya of Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Chassam Sofer, and that period of history is a separate sugya. Let's talk a little bit about Rabbi Leib Eger's father. The reason we need to talk about Rabbi Leib Eger is because in order to understand what Rabbi Leib Eger was up against, in order for him to become Rabbi Leib Eger, what he had going for him and what was against him, we have to study. We have to talk about a little bit about the life of Rabbi Shlomo Eger to understand the somewhat complicated relationship here between the father and the son. When I say complicated, that does not mean that I'm in any way psychoanalyzing these people. You'll have some people that do that. I certainly would never dare do that. I only mean in Mitzias, there are certain complications since Rabbi Leib Eger chose a new path. And that's one of the most inspirational things about Rabbi Leib Eger, is taking into consideration, to account, the family he came from. And for him to make a decision to go to Kutsk. Now, Kutsk was not just another brand of Chassidus. Kutsk was a radical breakaway from Chassidus. And for Rabbi Leib Eger to make that decision to go to Kutsk, in order to appreciate what that means, what it means for the history of Chassidus, and what it meant back then, we have to understand where was Rabbi Leib Eger coming from. Rabbi Shlomo Eger, the father of Rabbi Leib Eger, was born in 1785, Tavkuf Mem Hei. From the time that he was a child, he was known as one of the greatest Iluyim of the generation, one of the greatest prodigies, geniuses of the generation, as befit the son of Rabbi Akiva Eger. And he married into a wealthy family. His wife, his Rebbetzin's name was Golda, the daughter of Rabbi Yisrael Hirschenson from Warsaw. You're going to see in the story of Leib Eger that there are many interesting twists of Hashgacha Pratis that brought Rabbi Leib Eger to Kutsk. And it's clear that Hashem wanted Rabbi Leib Eger to end up in Kutsk. The first thing here that we see is the fact that Reb Shlomo Eger married into a family from Warsaw. And that's very important because I'm sure many of you know that Warsaw was already becoming a stronghold of Hasidus at that time. It was becoming one of the centers of Hasidus in Poland. Reb Shlomo Eger's wife was from Warsaw, and he moved to Warsaw, and he lived by his in-laws, who were from the wealthiest families, one of the wealthiest families in the entire area. And besides that, he became known as a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Reb Shlomo Eger became involved in the business of his father-in-law, and within a short time Reb Shlomo became one of the most prominent businessmen in all of Poland. As a result of him becoming one of the greatest merchants in all of Poland, he was able to make very important connections with some of the ministers, some of the important government officials of Poland, and was able to help the Jewish community in many ways. But we know also that one of the extraordinary things about Reb Shlomo Eger is that although he was an extremely prominent businessman, had many holdings throughout Poland and Germany as well, it was one of the remarkable things that Reb Shlomo Eger was known for was that he was able to learn on the highest level, and people came, he had students even then that came from all over Europe to study by him, and he had to tend to his business, and he would close the Gemara, he would close the Sefer, and when he would return after the day of business, he was able to continue with the very same thought that he had left off. Which if you try that for us, it's hard to do that after 10 minutes. You can't even do that. He was able to continue from the same sentence where he left off, as if there hadn't been a break. The explanation for that, which is something natural, is because he had received a bracha when he went into business. He was afraid of how it would affect his learning. And his illustrious father, Rabbi Kiva Eger, gave him a bracha. It says in the Sefer, Asher miyad kishetachzer lilimudcha, when you return, he gave him a bracha that Hashem should help that when you return after your day in business, when you return to learn, you're not going to have to go back and to go back to the place where you began learning that morning. You're going to be able to just to continue. You'll be able to continue from where you left off without any effort. And then you will return in peace to your place and to your learning. And that bracha was fulfilled, and Reb Shlomo Eger was a businessman in Warsaw for 35 years. Became one of the wealthiest Jews in Poland, Reb Shlomo Eger, and at the same time, some of the finest minds of the in Poland were coming, those young men were coming to learn by him, where he would say a shiur early in the morning, he would say a shiur at night, and in between he was involved with business with the richest people in Europe. This was going on for 35 years in Warsaw. Good things come to an end, but we'll see that this too is part of the Hashgach of Hashem, of Hashem's providence. During that period of 35 years, practically every important Jewish community in Poland and many in Germany offered him, came begging him to be Rav, to be the Rav of the city. But Reb Shlomo Eger did not want to derive any benefit from the study of Torah, and he remained a businessman. But what happened is that at that time, in 1835, there was a war. At that time, there was a war going on between Russia and Poland, and as a result of that, many of the wealthiest merchants, businessmen of Poland and Russia, lost everything. Included among those who lost his entire fortune was Reb Shlomo Eger, and as a result of that. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing for Reb Shlomo Eger and his family, but for Klai Yisrael, it was wonderful. Because that forced Reb Shlomo Eger to accept a position in Rabbanus. He was originally offered the position in Frankfurt, in Germany, which is, of course, a very famous and very important position, which he turned down. He did not want to go to Germany, because he felt that Germany, at that time, Germany had taken a turn towards modernization. Reb Shlomo Eger felt that the level of Torah study in Frankfurt had declined terribly, And his hope was to establish a center of learning. He didn't feel that he could do that in Frankfurt. So instead, he accepted the position in the city of Kalisch, and in that was a city that was filled with Talmid Chacham, with scholars. And there he was able to focus on learning, and he established a very important yeshiva. This unfortunately continued for 3 years. After 3 years in Kalisch, Rabbi Akiva Eger, his father, passed away. And his father was Rav in Posen. And after his father passed away, the community of Posen sent a group of leaders from the city to Reb Shlomila to ask Reb Shlomila Eger to come to continue to take over the position of Posen Rav after his father, the great Rabbi Akiva Eger, passed away. They didn't feel anybody was fit for the position except for Reb Shlomila Eger, and also the idea that Malchus of the family, that it should continue. With very great reluctance, Reb Shlomila Eger agreed to go. Posen was a city where his father, Rabbi Akiva Eger, struggled terribly with maskilim, with those who had turned towards the Enlightenment and modernization. They were at odds with each other. Rabbi Akiva Eger with the maskilim, with those more modern Jews in Posen. Nevertheless, Reb Shlomila Eger felt, and we'll see this throughout his life, he felt a responsibility, a commitment towards his father's ways. And this also is something which is very, very interesting in how it affected Reb Leibler later on. That Reb Shlomila felt that if his father, who could have been Rav in any city in the world that he wanted to, he stayed there for all those years. So Reb Shlomila felt that he should continue, and despite the fact that the learning was better in Kalisch, and he didn't have to deal with the whole problem with the reform, with the Haskalah. Nevertheless, he decided that he would take over his father's position, and he remained there until he died in 1852, and he was successful in establishing a great yeshiva and strengthening the work of his father, and to some degree suppressing or being able to hold back the movement that was developing, the Haskalah movement that had been developing in the city of Posen. And Reb Shlomila Eger raised a family of great scholars, of men of great scholarship, and women who married into great families of Talmid Chachamim. But his fourth son was a Echad Yochid Miyuchel, was unique. His fourth son, Reb Leibler, Reb Yehuda Leib, who would later on become affectionately known as Reb Leibler, Reb Yehuda Leib Eger, was born in 1816, Tavkuf Ayin Vav in Warsaw, and he was named after his uncle, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Eger. From the time that he was a child, whenever we talk about the tzaddikim, so from the time that he was a child, the fact that he was a brilliant wonder child is not what stood out. Rabbi Leibler Eger was brilliant, and he was a wonder. He was a genius, and he was a wonder. But what stood out in Rabbi Leibler Eger was his holiness, his pureness. And this is something that anybody who's ever read Reb Leibler Eger, who's ever learned this from Reb Leibler Eger, knows that Reb Leibler, over and over in almost every piece, returns to the Inyan of Shabbos and to Kedusha Sabris, the holiness of the Jew, the sanctity of the Jew, the Kedusha of one's thoughts, of one's personal life, and so on. Reb Leibler Eger was a Kodesh Vitar, was a holy and pure person that was truly a wonder amongst all the great scholars and tzaddikim of Poland. He was considered to be a wonder child. His father in the beginning did not agree to give him to anybody else to teach, to learn with, and Reb Shlomila Eger himself studied with Reb Leibler. Later on, he hired some very chashev melamdim teachers. And also, whenever Reb Shlomila Eger went to visit his father, Rabbi Akiva Eger, he would always take one son. Usually he would take one son and Reb Leibler. Reb Leibler almost always went together with the father to visit the grandfather, to visit Rabbi Akiva Eger. But here, another interesting thing. Since, as I mentioned, Reb Shlomila Eger married a family from Warsaw, and he lived in Warsaw, there was a great genius of the generation who had a yeshiva at that time in Warsaw. And some of you, I'm sure, heard of him, Rabbi Yitzhak Meir, better known as the Chedusha Harim, the Ger Rebbe. Now, the Chiddush Harim had the finest students in all of Warsaw, and Reb Shlomo Eger sent Reb Leibler to learn by the Chiddush Harim. Later on, he might have regretted doing that, because it turned out that not only was the Chiddush Harim teaching Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos, but the Chiddush Harim also had a huge impact upon many of the young men that were who were under his care, who became afterwards Chassidim of Pshischa and Kotzk. As you know, that the Chiddush Harim himself was a fiery follower of that world. But it was a regular yeshiva, and since the father of Shlomo Eger, who was not by any means a chassid, but Reb Shlomo Eger knew that the Chiddush Harim was a great genius, despite the fact that he was a chassid, he sent Reb Leibler to learn by the Chiddush Harim. This would prove to be a historic decision on Reb Shlomo's part, and one, as I said before, that he probably on some level did regret. But he sent Reb Leibler to learn by the Chiddush Harim. Reb Leibler married into a very prominent and wealthy family, Reb Israel Meir Grodstein. This Reb Israel Meir Grodstein was one of the leaders of the community of Lublin. Also, every step along the way is Hashgacha Pratis. This marriage would bring Reb Leibler to the city of Lublin. The city of Lublin, as you all know, was saturated with that spirit of the great Tzaddik, the seer of Lublin, the Chayzer, who had passed away some years before. So Reb Leibler ends up in the house of a strong misnagid. His father-in-law, Rabbi Israel, who was a very big Talmud Chacham, was a misnagid. He was strongly opposed to Hasidus, but he lived in the city of Lublin. His daughter, Rebbetzin Bashi, was not the first of the family of the Grodstein family to marry with the Eger family. This Reb Israel Meir's oldest son, Reb Ephraim Fischel, actually had married a daughter of Reb Akiva Eger. Now Chasson is taking place with his daughter, with Reb Akiva Eger's grandson. So the family had already, the Egers and the Grossteins had already married together, and it's famous that when she was a little girl, Bashi, the one who would end up marrying the grandson, at the wedding of her older brother, Rabbi Kiv Eger turned to her for no apparent reason and smiled and said to her, Brocha, you're going to have a very good chassan. She was only a little girl. In the end, she married Reb Leibler Eger, who was Rabbi Kiv Eger's grandson. It's all very interesting. So this chassan took place, and Reb Leibler, this was in 1835, and Reb Leibler moved to Lublin, and he lived in the mansion of his in-laws. And he was learning Torah with unbelievable precious, unbelievable holiness and total seclusion from the world for some time. And the money that was given to him as part of the chasna agreement, the money that was given to him, he gave within 2 weeks every penny he gave away to poor people. This was already causing some aggravation in the mishpacha, as it was apparently a fortune of money that they had hoped would be used for his own family. In the meantime, when he used to go to the big shul in Lublin, where he originally davened, when he would walk into shul, poor people would follow him like the Pied Piper. Reb Leibler would not turn around. He would simply take money, and he would, in order not to embarrass anybody with looking, he would take money and he would throw it over his shoulders until he had nothing left of the money from the chasna. This was going to cause some aggravation for himself also later on, when he was thrown out of the house. He could have used the money. But while he was still there, he was taken care of. In the beginning, he was his father-in-law's pride, Rabbi Kiv Eger's grandson. Reb Leibler, who the whole world, when he would walk in the street, all the women would run across the street. They would run because he was so known as a Kaddish, as a holy person, that the women were afraid to stand on the same side of the street. This Reb Leibler that all of Lublin was in awe of. His brilliance in learning and his kedusha. So in the beginning, his father-in-law, Reb Israel Meir, was quelling with such nachas and pride. This was not going to last for too long. The Rav at that time, also a very important Hashgacha Pratis, you'll see why. The Rav at that time was the great Reb Meshulam Zalman, who fell in love with Reb Leibler immediately. They became very close. He was 60 years older than Reb Leibler. but they would learn together, and they became very close. And this would turn out to be something very important, because after Reb Leibel Egler would join Kotzk, and as a result of that, his father-in-law and many of his father-in-law's friends and relatives were roide for Reb Leibel. They caused him a great deal of aggravation. The Rav of Lublin, the old Rav, Reb Meshulam Zalman, he stood up and tried to defend, and he did a good job, as we'll see later on, to try to help Reb Leibel during the difficult time. There was one period in the beginning when Reb Leibel and his wife had no place to live because the father-in-law wouldn't let them in. And Reb Leibel moved into the house of Reb Meshulam Zalman. Now keep in mind that the one who was paying a large percentage of the Rav's salary was Reb Leibel's father-in-law. So when the Rav took Reb Leibel in, that didn't work out too well for the Rav, right? In the end, we'll talk more about it. It's a very interesting, the whole sugi here is very interesting with the family. But that was the Rav of Lublin, was a very chassid. He was not a chassid by any means, but he loved Reb Leibel, and this would turn out to be something which would play an important role in Reb Leibel's life. After a short time, Reb Leibel Egger decided he no longer wanted to daven with his father-in-law in the big shul because he was getting a lot of covet over there, and he didn't want to be honored in such a way. So he went to daven in the Beis Medrash of the Chayzer of Lublin. He went to daven in the Beis Medrash. The Chayzer had already been dead for some time, but he went to daven there in the Beis Medrash of the Chayzer. And some of the finest young men of Poland were there. The Hasidim were there. It's well known that in Lublin, Pshischa, and Kotsk, nobody received any covet except for the Rebbe. It made no difference who you were. You came in, you sat, you learned, you davened. It didn't make a difference to them that he was Rebbe Kivega's grandson. And he enjoyed that very much. He was able to come to the Beis Medrash and be one of the guys. He was able to just sort of blend into the Chevra. And that's where he preferred to daven. At that point, his father was getting a little bit nervous. But the father-in-law had respect for the Chayzer of Lublin. He did have respect for the Chayzer who had passed away, but he had respect for the Chayzer and for some of those Hasidim. Even though the father-in-law was a misnagid, he knew of the Chayzer and he had respect for the Seer of Lublin. But this was already the beginning of Reb Leibel's connection to Hasidus. Now, let's turn back to the family a little bit. Reb Leibel was particularly close to his grandfather, Rebbe Kiva Eger. More than any of the grandchildren in the family, Rebbe Kiva Eger showed affection and closeness to this grandson, to Reb Leibel. And therefore, Rebbe Kiva Eger had special chavrus, a special shiurim that he learned with Reb Leibel privately, one-on-one. And this would have also a great impact upon Reb Leibel. Reb Leibel Eger would quote his grandfather, one of the famous pieces in Teres Emes for Tu B'Av, in the piece that deals with Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, he quotes from his grandfather, Rebbe Kiva Eger, which is very interesting because we see many similarities between, we find many places in the teachings of the grandson, we feel the presence of the grandfather. Even though, of course, the grandfather was not at all attached to the Derech HaBaal Shem Tov. Nevertheless, Reb Leibel received from the grandfather a great deal. And he would spend long periods of time there. Even after Reb Leibel Eger went to Kotsk and he became a full-fledged chassid, he was always welcomed in the home of his grandfather. Even when his father and his father-in-law would not allow him to come home, he always had a place by his grandfather. And Rebbe Kiva Eger's love for Reb Leibel never subsided. There are many indications that his love increased, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more later on. We have a story regarding the interesting relationship in the family. We have a story from a person who we would not expect to tell this story, from Rav Velvel Soloveitchik, from the Brisker Rav. The family of Brisk, from a whole different school, the Briskers had tremendous respect, as you know, for Rebbe Kiva Eger. Therefore, they were also fascinated by the whole family, by Reb Leibel Eger. So we have some stories that came down to us from Reb Chaim Brisker and from his son, the Brisker Rav, Reb Velvel. One of the stories that we have from the Brisker Rav, and you know that the Brisker Rav is very careful when he said something to verify his truth, and this is something that he had heard from his father, Reb Chaim Brisker. The Brisker Rav said that one time Rebbe Kiva Eger was learning with his son, with Reb Shlaimele, and all of a sudden Rebbe Kiva Eger, Reb Leibel's grandfather, all of a sudden Rebbe Kiva Eger disappeared for 20 minutes. He got up and he left for 20 minutes. When he came back, he said to Reb Shlaimele, this is what it says in the Sefer, Da lecha, you should know, Sha'achshav hitzalti es Leibel misakonas mavis. I want you to know that I just saved Leibler's life. His life was in great danger. Now, Reb Leibler was not there. Reb Leibler was back in Warsaw. This is in Posen. Rabbi Kiviger has said that I just saved Leibler's life. What does that mean? He says, Kedarka holach shakur bi'iyun bilimudav ubelikim. He says that Leibler, the grandfather of Kiviger, said that Leibler, Reb Leibler was walking deep in thought in that world of learning and of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And his mind was elsewhere, and as a result of that, he fell into some sort of a snowdrift of some sort. He got stuck. And he couldn't get out of this. It was, I guess, some sort of what's it called, like a, huh? Yeah, that fell on him or something. He couldn't get out. And he was in danger of dying. So, Lachain, he says, Hifsakta mi limudai v'halachti l'hatzilai. Therefore, I stopped learning and I went to save him. He went to daven in one of the rooms of the house for 20 minutes to save the grandson. And then Rabbi Kivega said, Aval eini moichalai. I will not forgive him. Al habitul teresh leshem dakos shenuga mayodo. I'm not forgiving him from the 20 minutes of learning that he took away from me, that I had to go bother to pull him out of the snow. I'm angry about those 20 minutes. And I took care of him. He's all right, but I'm angry. So when Reb Leibler Eger heard about it, it was the exact same moment they found out. That was exactly when Reb Leibler was in the snow. So when the whole thing ended, so Reb Leibler had a lot of aggravation that his grandfather was upset and that happened. So Reb Leibler accepted upon himself, he fasted 20 consecutive weeks. Not days, weeks. That means he would eat at night. But he fasted for 20 consecutive, without Shabbos, of course. He fasted 20 weeks to make up for the 20 minutes of Bittul Torah that he caused his grandfather, Rabbi Kiviger. The path of Reb Leibler to Chassidus is one of the most fascinating in all of the stories of the Chassidim. The path that led Reb Leibler, that led Reb Leibler to the Derech HaBaal Shem Tov is very fascinating. Here too we have a tradition from Reb Chaim Brisker. That Reb Chaim Brisker said was one day Reb Chaim Brisker was talking about Reb Leibler Eger leaving that world that he came from and going to Kotsk. Apparently what happened was that when Reb Chaim Brisker was telling this, he was saying, who was he telling this to? To a room full of misnagdim in Brisk. So there was somebody there after, and Reb Chaim was talking about Reb Leibler leaving when he went to Kotsk, and there was somebody that was there, one of the Rabbanim who was there, said that in his opinion, it's a terrible shame that Reb Leibler left his father and grandfather, and that he went to Chassidus, he went to Kotsk. The Brisker Rav said that when his father heard that Rav say that, he began to shake. And he began, the Brisker Rav said, for well over an hour to explain and to justify, can you imagine Rav Chaim Brisker, to explain why is it that Reb Leibler had to go? Why did Reb Leibler leave his home and the comfort of what he had and the guaranteed position that he had to be one of the biggest Rabbanim in the world? He left all of that to suffer poverty and humiliation in Kotsk. So Reb Chaim explained for well over an hour why was that. So the Brisker Rav said that he was there also. And after he heard his father go through that, so I read in the Sefer, it says, Acher has Beirav Shel Avi, Nish'alu L'Kulon Ubali Beinu. All of us had a question. We heard that Reb Chaim say this. The Brisker said, my father said this over, that was explaining why Reb Leibler left. So he said we all had a question that we were afraid to ask. And the question was, Im kein marotza ovi Reb Shlomo imen. If it was so right for him to go, if it was such a good decision, as Reb Chaim explained, then why was his father so angry? What was Reb Shlomo Leibler so angry about? So, they didn't say this, he said. The Brisker Rav said, we didn't say anything. Ach avi hevin. Reb Chaim understood that this was bothering us. V'tofas es machshav aseinu, he read our thoughts. U'posach miyad v'sicha arucha lahazber es meniyiv shel hagrash. And Reb Chaim began to explain for another hour why was Reb Shlomo Leeger right for being upset. So this is from Beis Brisk that we have this conversation that took place in the home. The important thing to know is as follows. There are many stories that are circulating in the world about what happened when Reb Leibler left. One of the most popular ones is that when he left, his father sat Shiva. That when Reb Leibler went to Kusk, his father sat Shiva. It's clear that that's an absolute lie. It cannot be. And I'll explain in a moment. You have to realize that Hasidim had many enemies. And the fact that Rabbi Kivega's grandson, Rabbi Shlomo Eger's son, went over to Kutsk, this does not sit well with the Misnagdim. They were not happy about that. Certainly his father-in-law and his father were upset. But the common notion, the common belief that Rabbi Shlomo Eger sat Shiva for his son is ridiculous. They continued their relationship after that as well. There were disagreements, there were problems, but they continued. Also, let me just read to you from the will that was written by Reb Shlomo Eger, and in that will that he left, that he wrote the following, specifically to Reb Leibler. This was already after, of course, Reb Leibler had become a Kutzker Chassid. He wrote, Shaloi lahakel b'chvayd shum adam. Reb Shlomo Eger wrote, I don't want you to be lenient when it comes to the honor of any Jew. You have to honor every Jew. And included in this, I don't want you to ever say anything negative about any group of Hasidim. What's that? You know that Hasidim, they should all be well, will sometimes have some things to say about other Hasidim. That's putting it mildly. Generally, among the Hasidim, I was once with a very fine Talmud Chacham, who was a Hasid, a follower of a great Rebbe. And he began to say about a Rebbe, I was talking about another Rebbe, and he started to say crazy like Lashon Hara. He said crazy stuff. And the man said, Talmud Chacham, I was shocked, and I looked at him like, what are you doing? And he said, a chassid of another Rebbe, you're allowed to say Lashon Hara. In other words, it's part of our chassidus to hate all the other Rebbes, and to put down the other Rebbes. God forbid. I mean, of course, it's not allowed, but there is such a thing among the chassidim, that sometimes to make their Rebbe, you know, even greater, so sometimes they'll put in a little bit of a shtach to another Rebbe, it's well known. So, Rabbi Shlomo Eger left in his, not that Rabbi Label would ever do such a thing, but Rabbi Shlomo Eger said, I don't want you to look down on any Jew, and not a Jew from any, who follows another Rebbe among the Hasidim. Shalalakum b'chvayit shum adam b'chlolu shalaladabir ra'al al chaburas Hasidim, temtashav b'chaburas shumadabim ra'alayim. And if you're sitting with Hasidim who have negative things to say about other Hasidim or about other Rabbis, Tasiya hadvarim l'davar acher, turn the conversation to a different subject. This is what he left as an instruction to his son. It doesn't sound like he thought his son was dead, or he considered him to be dead. Aleph. In addition to that, keep in mind what I said before. Reb Shlomo Leeger sent his son to learn by the Chiddush HaHarim. Reb Shlomo knew exactly what was happening in the Beis Medrash of the Chiddush HaHarim, and he knew that the Chiddush HaHarim was learning with them Chassidus, and he knew that the Chiddush HaHarim was trying to get the boys to go with him to Kutsk, to go to the Tzaddikim. Reb Shlomo Leeger was completely aware of this. Nevertheless, so then why did Reb Shlomo, as a misnagid, why did he send him to the Chiddush HaHarim? Two simple reasons. One, there was nobody that could equal the Chiddush HaHarim in all of Warsaw in learning, and his Derech HaLim, but he had a very original way of learning. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that Reb Shlomo was a bitter enemy of the Maskilim, of the Reformers. Bitter enemy. And apparently, the Reform was beginning to make some inroads into Warsaw itself. There was only one other Jew in all of Warsaw who shared with Reb Shlomo the hatred for the Reform, and that's the Chiddush HaHarim, the Ger Reb. So as a result of these two things, the learning that was taking place by the Chiddush HaHarim and the Chiddush HaHarim, the shared negative feelings that they had towards the Reform, and the Chiddush HaHarim's very, very meticulous attachment to every custom, to every minhag, and to make sure to preserve the way of dressing as the Polish Jews dressed, and so on. So Reb Shlomo Leger felt that he would take the risk of the Chidushim's being a chassid, and he would send Reb Leibler to learn by him better than Reb Leibler will be by the Chidush Arim, then God forbid, to perhaps, God forbid, be sucked into the reform, which is taking some of the young people at that time away from the yeshivas. This apparently was the cheshbon of Reb Shlomo Leger, but clearly the fact that he sent his son to learn by the Chidush Arim could not mean that he was such a misnagid that he would sit shiva over his son going there. In addition to all of this, and I think the most important fact, and this comes back to what I mentioned at the very beginning, Reb Shlomo Leger did not do a thing in his life without his father's rishus, without his father's permission. The honor that he had for his father, the respect that Reb Shlomo had for Reb Akiva Eger, is remarkable. It's seen in every sefer that he wrote. Reb Shlomo Leger's attachment to the customs of his father, to the teachings of his father, was complete. Therefore, it seems very unlikely that with a grandfather, Reb Akiva Eger continued to adore his grandson. And we'll see later on that Reb Akiva Eger felt that Reb Leibler should be left alone and let him stay there. And ultimately, Reb Akiva Eger felt that Reb Leibler's Yirah Shemayim, that his fear of God was even growing stronger in Kusk. It's very unlikely that Reb Shlomo Leger would have sat shiva. If his father, who he completely worshipped, continued with Reb Leibler, it would be ridiculous to think that Reb Shlomo Leger sat shiva. So then you had others who said, well, maybe Reb Shlomo Leger didn't sit shiva, but Reb Leibler's father-in-law, Reb Israel Meir, he certainly sat shiva. That's what the Maskilim wrote, I found in one sefer. Now that we all know that that's absurd, our father-in-law doesn't sit shiva over his son-in-law, even if, God forbid, he dies. So there's no shiva over a son-in-law that goes to Kutz. It's absurd. But in one of the, just to give you an idea, this business about people sitting shiva or Reb Leibler did not come from anywhere except the Maskilim, from the reformers themselves who hated the Eger family and hated the Hasidim, right? They hated the Egers because Rabbi Akiva and Reb Shlomo were their biggest enemies in Poland. And they hated the Hasidim because the Hasidim represented everything that they despised. So these lies, these fantasies about everybody sitting shiva for Reb Leibler came from Misnagdim and came from Maskilim, who were trying to discredit both the Hasidim and the family of the great Rabbi Akiva Eger. But there's absolutely no truth to any of this. In fact, it seems that the real underlying reason for Reb Shlomo's strong opposition was not so much because of what was happening to his son, to Reb Leibler, in terms of learning or being God-fearing. We'll talk about that also more next week. Mostly what bothered Reb Shlomo Eger was the fact that he left his family, that he left his wife, it was the first year of their marriage, that Reb Leibler would leave for considerable periods of time to go to Kutsk. Reb Shlomo Eger was very upset about that, but more than anything, Reb Israel, Reb Leibler's father-in-law, who was an extremely powerful person, a very influential and very strong-minded person, Reb Israel was so upset, was so distraught about Reb Leibler leaving. And here he had taken as his son-in-law the one who he felt was going to be the follower, the one who would follow in the footsteps of Rabbi Akiva Eger and Reb Shlomo, who would be one of the greatest Rabbanim, and that's why he took him as his son-in-law. And then he went off to Kutsk, and we'll see that he became in Kutsk, he was schlepping and cleaning with the rest of the Chassidim over there. So Reb Israel couldn't take that his daughter was in such a situation, and that she was left alone for weeks and weeks at a time. And it seems that Reb Shlomo was trying to appease Reb Israel and to hold the marriage together. Not so much that Reb Shlomo was against Reb Leibler per se, or because of Kutsk, although there was something there. But mostly it seems that Reb Shlomo was afraid that this was going to destroy the family. And Reb Israel was getting very angry. This seems to have caused Reb Shlomo's strong hisnagdus. But again, even with the anger, even in terms of Reb Israel's opposition, it's greatly exaggerated. Let's talk about what happened. This has been carefully documented, and it's very interesting. As I said before, that Reb Leibler had already had some acquaintance. Reb Leibler had already had some acquaintance with Chassidus from when he was a young man in yeshiva, Bachdush Arim, and then later on when he was married, as I said before, he was in the Beis Medrash, so he went to daven in the Beis Medrash of Chayza. The first day that he walked into the Beis Medrash of the Chayza of Lublin, he noticed that there was by the front of the Beis Medrash, at the front of the Beis Medrash, there was in the wall an engraving the shape of a human hand in the front of the Beis Medrash. The rest of the Beis Medrash had been painted quite a few times. And he asked, what is that? And they told him that that is the place where the seer of Lublin, the Chayzer, would daven. That was the front of the shul by Mizrach where he davened. And even though he died 20 years before, they painted over the shul many times since then, but that's the place where he would daven and he would lean. And it was with such intensity that he was davening that there was a place in the Beis Medrash of Lublin that existed until World War II, where it was not touched. That in the wall by the Chayzer there was the shape of a human hand. That it was with such intensity that apparently over the years of davening there, the shape of the hand was engraved into the wall. And the Chassidim, of course, didn't paint that over, they left that alone. When Reb Leibler heard about this was the first day he was in Beis Medrash, when Reb Leibler heard about this, we're told that he ran over to that place, and with great hisrachus, with emotion, his lavas, he went and he kissed that place that was touched by the Chayzer from Lublin. When the Chassidim saw this, they looked at each other and they said, we're going to get him. Right? And this is the biggest catch in all of Europe. You have to understand, you're real in Reb Leibler, Eger, this is the biggest catch in Europe. But they saw that they thought he comes from a family like this, that maybe he just came to daven a little bit to see what it's like. And here he is, he's on fire and he runs over and he gives a kiss to the hand of the Chayze over there. So from that time, the Chassidim already began to conspire and figure out ways, how are we going to get him to Kutsk? We got to bring him to Kutsk. To the Kutsker. The truth is that Reb Leibler himself desperately wanted to go, but he was afraid because he knew that if he would do this, it would jeopardize his standing in the family, and he knew that his father-in-law, Reb Israel, was an opponent to Kutsk, to Chassidus. So for some time, he was able to hold himself back. However, over the months, his ishtaikikus, his longing and his yearning to go to Kutsk had become so strong that he decided that he had to go. He hid this, his plan to go, from his father-in-law, from his mother-in-law. He did tell his wife, the Rebbetzin Bashi. He told her, and she was completely in favor of it. We'll talk more about that interesting later on. We'll talk about that more later on. And then she did not tell her father. She did not tell the family. And she also felt that it would be wise not to mention this to any of the Chassidim, because this is something that she felt would certainly get around town, that Reb Leibler went to Kutsk. So she herself kept it a secret, and Reb Leibler kept it a secret, and he went to Kutsk. He went to Kutsk. On the way, he learned that the Kutsk that week, that Shabbos, the Kutsker was not going to be in Kutsk, but was going to be in another village along the way. And he went to that village, and when he came, the Kutsker was, before he came in, the Kutsker for some time was looking at the door, was fidgeting, was nervous, and the Reb Leibler came in, so the Kutsker said, you know, I've been waiting for you for a long time, and the Kutsker showed him a tremendous amount of kavod, a tremendous amount of respect, but that was just that first day. In Kutsk, respect was earned. It wasn't just because of who your grandfather was and your father. So he came that, we have a number of interesting stories, some of them I'll tell you about the beginning when he first came to Kutsk. But we know that when he arrived, the Kutsker said, "Bishvil avreich zeh hayaroy leleches kama meyas milin." That for such a young man, it's worth walking to find such a young man a couple of hundred miles. Now those of you who know a little bit about the Kutsker know that to get a compliment from the Kutsker was not a simple matter. And he's not known for his compliments. He's very famous for his insults, but he's not known for his compliments. So to say such a thing was very unusual. And Reb Leibler did not come for kavod, and that made him uncomfortable. And it lasted only, as I said, at the very beginning. After that, the Kutsker assigned, this is another amazing twist in the Hashgacha. The Kotzker at that time was already old, and some of you might know that for the practically last 20 years of his life, the Kotzker was not really spending time with the Hasidim. The Kotzker was mostly in isolation. He stayed by himself in his room, and he was hardly seen in public, and even if he would come out for an aliyah, it would be with a talus over his face, and it was a very strange period in Kotzk, the period of the Segira of when he was locked in his room, when he stayed in the room. Therefore, when Reb Leibler came, the Kotzker assigned a great young man to be in charge of Reb Leibler Eger, to be his Rebbe in Kotzk, and that was Reb Mordechai Yosef Mizbitz, the Izbitzer. This would later on become one of the most dramatic episodes in all of Chassidus, because ultimately, I'm sure that many of you know, Reb Leibler turned away from Kotzk, and he left after that Simchas Torah, which we'll talk about, and he went with the Izbitzer to begin a new school of Chassidus, the school of Izbitzer Lublin. And nevertheless, the Kotzker assigned the Izbitzer, was put in charge of, Mordechai Yosef was put in charge of the gifted young men. So Reb Leibler was sent to Reb Mordechai Yosef, and he studied with him, and he became very attached to him. He became extremely attached, as did the other young men who would ultimately become the first followers of the Izbitzer. The Chevraya, the Chevra, the group that was in Kotzk, it's hard for us to understand what kind of people we're talking about. There wasn't a young man there who didn't know Shas inside out, the whole Torah Shebaal Peh. There wasn't a young man there who had not spent most of the years of his life fasting and davening. It was a very unusual collection of people that were in Kotzk, and it wasn't easy to be in Kotzk. One of the stories from that first year when Reb Leibler was in Kotzk, was that he came into the, that he stayed in Yom Kippur night, he stayed in Shul late, Reb Leibler, and everybody went home, and there were a couple of Chassidim that stayed in the Bis Medrash, and Reb Leibler was there, and the Chassidim started to talk, and one Chassid said, you know, what Nusach do you say Kiddush on Yom Kippur? How do you make Kiddush on Yom Kippur? What should we say in the Kiddush? So they start to talk about what Kiddush do you say, and Reb Leibler is sitting there. You know, Reb Leibler is very frum. He was very religious. And Reb Leibler is listening to this, and he doesn't know what to make of it. What do you mean, Kiddush to make him? It's Yom Kippur. And they're talking. And then says, you see, we have the key to the shtender, where they keep the wine. And Reb Leibler can't believe it. And the chassid takes out the wine, takes out a cup, and he pours the wine. Reb Leibler jumps up and screams, stop! What are you doing? What? Listen. So Reb Leibler screams, what are you doing? What's the matter with you? So the Chassidim said to him, these two Chassidim said, what's the matter with you? What are you screaming? So he says, it's Yom Kippur. So he says, so what if it's Yom Kippur? So he says, if it's Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to drink on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to drink on Yom Kippur. He says, where does it say you can't drink? He says, it's in the Torah, it's in the Gemara. You can't drink in Yom Kippur. He says, who said that it's in the Torah? He says, what do you mean, who says it? The Rabbi Shalom. The Rabbi Shalom gave the Torah. Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people, and you can't drink in Yom Kippur. So the Chassidim said, and who's Hashem? And at this point, Reb Leibler started to fumfer, you know, like, well. And then the Chassid put the bottle away, and he says, Leibler, you're in Kotzk already for 2 months, 3 months, and you still don't know who the Baruch Shalom is. That was the story. Like, you got a lot to learn, buddy. What does that mean? They were never going to drink. Then there are other Maestlim like this. It was sort of an initiation rite. Here you have the son of the famous rich Rabbi Shlomo Eger, the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger. So it wasn't so easy to break into Kotzk. It wasn't so easy. And there are a number of other stories about things that they did, the tricks that they played on them in the beginning. Nevertheless, he found there eventually a place where he felt at home. When his father ultimately asked him, what did you learn in Kotzk? Why did you leave? What did you learn in Kotzk?
So Reb Leibler's answer was, Shloisha Devarim Lamadati Shah. There are three things that I learned in Kutsk. Sha'odam hu Adam, a man is a man. Humalach humalach, and an angel is an angel. That's the second. Va'id, and the third thing, Shabichailas ha'odam liyas yaisim yamalach. The third thing I learned is that a man can become even greater than an angel. And then he said, Bereishis bara lukim, in the beginning Hashem created, Shakadosh Baruch Hu bara rakis ha'bereishis. All Hashem created is the beginning. That's all God created. Vesashar, hishir livnei adam, but the rest is God left up to man. All God creates in this world is the beginning, but the end is man's business. That's what he said to, we don't know what Reb Shlomo answered to any of that, of course, but that's what Reb Leibel has said for the three things that he learned in Kutsk. Just to end this week, the news of his going to Kutsk obviously eventually reached Lublin, reached home. His father-in-law, putting it mildly, as we say, went out of his kalim. The father-in-law went crazy about this. The father-in-law Mamish went on the warpath, and he sent a shliach, he sent a messenger. The messenger was not to ask Reb Leibler how he felt. The messenger was to bring him home. And he had instructions, go get him. The messenger was Reb Shlomo Libertov. You have to understand, the messenger himself was a big Talmud Chacham, a very chashuv Yid. So he went to Kutsk. When he came to Kutsk, the messenger came to Kutsk, it was Erev Shabbos, and he asked, where is the great Goyim, the great Tzaddik, the Kaddish, you know, where is the great master of Reb Yehuda Leib? You know, he gave this whole thing. So the Hasidim said, Leibler? So right away he was very angry. They said, they called him over there. Some say that they called him Reb Leibler Akivas. Some say they called him Reb Leibler Shloimeh Akivas. But they said, oh, you look for Leibler? Leibler went to the well. He's by the well, by the Be'er. So what do you mean, Leibler is by the well? What would he be doing there? So they asked, where is it? And the Shliach said, go over there. And they told this Talmud Chacham, go to the well. And they showed him where it was, and he went. And when he came there, he saw that Reb Leibler Eger was cleaning his socks in a bucket that was being lowered into the well. He was cleaning his socks for Shabbos. The messenger started to cry. He just broke down and started to cry. How could such a thing have happened? He starts to cry when he sees the famous genius, who was a prince from a princely family, standing there cleaning the socks. So he starts to, you know, they had servants with him. This is before Reb Shlomo lost his parnasa, you know. So he started to cry, and Reb Leibler turned around and he saw Reb Shlomo Libertov, and he loved him. He grew up in the same town, and he ran over. He says, Reb Shlomo, and he went and he started hugging him, and Reb Shlomo was crying. This Yid was crying, and he said, and the shliach said, it's not, what about the covet of your mishpacha? What about the honor of your family? What about the honor of your, even if you don't care about your father, what about your grandfather, Rabbi Akiva Eger? What about the honor of the mishpacha? What about the honor of the rabbanis of the Jewish people? So Reb Leibler told him, Kan lamadnu, here in Kutsk we learned, Shekol kama sheha'odim is alu misgadel, that the greater a person becomes, how you margish yoiser es apsiyuso, the more he feels his nothingness. That's what we learned in Kutsk. The greater a person, the more he senses he's nothing. The shliach understood that this is not going, and he went back empty-handed. He came back to Reb Israel without Reb Leibler, and Reb Israel immediately sent a second shliach. I'll finish in a minute. Reb Israel immediately sent a second messenger to speak to Reb Leibler. He also was unsuccessful. The third shliach was sent to Reb Leibler demanding that he comes to give a get, a divorce to his wife. There's no longer asking him to come home. Now it's time for a get. It's time for a divorce. During this entire time, what did his Rebbetzin think? That didn't particularly concern her father. It wasn't in those days. It was not something which was taken into consideration. The Rebbetzin was not at all influenced by any of this. Adarava, she sent a messenger to her husband in Kutsk, telling him, do not be afraid for me, and I will never be parted from you, no matter what. I will never, even if you would want to, I would never accept from you a divorce, and we'll remain together forever. And she continued in the correspondence with Reb Leibler. They continued to send letters and messengers to each other. Finally, we know that she said to her father the following thing. It says in the Sfarim, she said this, Abba, madu lo silmad mi Yisro chaysen Moshe. She said to her father, why don't you learn from Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu? But what? Shagam hu hishiris ishtav yotzil his boydeid b'midbar. Moshe Rabbeinu used to also go away for a long time by himself in the desert, you know, thinking about Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu also went, right? And Yisro never sent any messengers to bring him back. And he certainly never sent any messengers to get a get, to get a divorce. So what did he do? What did Yisro do? Ela nosa ba'atzmai el hamidbar. He went himself, Yisro, to the desert to go see what's going on. To go see what is it that my son-in-law Moshe is so fascinated by. V'lom aloi tisa gam ata ba'atzmachel ha-rebi mikotsk. So why don't you go yourself to the Rebbe of Kotsk? To see with your own eyes what's going on over there instead of all of this. So he did. He did, to his credit. Rabbi Israel Meir got up and he came to Kotsk. Oh, this was a maisa. When he came in, you have to realize he did not go there looking for anything good. He went there looking for a fight and to take, either to bring him home as a husband or to bring home a get. He wasn't going there to make peace with the Hasidim. But what happened was, he went into the Kotzker right away. Rabbi Israel from Lublin is here. Oh, all the Chassidim moved over. Rabbi Israel from Lublin, first he got upset because when he got in, they made him stand in the back of the line. Because there was no preference there. But the word came from inside that this is Leibler's father-in-law. Leibler's father-in-law let him in. So Rabbi Israel comes into the Kotzker with his boxing gloves on. And Rabbi Israel comes in with a tainer. This is the Taina. Klum loy nemer b'toyra nok yele beisoy shona achas. Doesn't it say that when a man is married that for 1 year, for the first year, at least for the first year, he should remain noki, he should remain alone with his, he should be with his wife in his house. Noki, which literally means what? Clean. But it means he should remain with his wife in the house. V'chosni harei lo avra adayin shona michasunoso. V'eicha tamashay lo shayerkon. So Rabbi Israel asked the Kotzker, and it's not even a year they're married, how do you let him stay here? What kind of a Rebbe are you? How do you let him stay here instead of going home to his wife? So the Kotzker said, you know, the Kotzker, he's not afraid. So the Kotzker said to him, Ilu ha'yisi yadeya shebebeisa yi anoki, if I knew that in the house that he lives in, meaning your house, it's clean, if I knew that it was noki, if it was clean in that place, it was pure and holy, as it is in my house, the Kotzker said, I would send him immediately home. Rabbi Israel slammed the door, and he walked out, and Rabbi Leibler remained. We'll talk about what happened afterwards in Mitzvah Shem, wow. And not next week, and the following week it'll have to continue. I mean, we already might be already Rosh Hashanah. Wow. Next week, and the next 2 weeks we won't have Shir. I don't know where it fits in with Yontif. Is that already?
That's after Yontif.